This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's open enrollment season for many health insurance plans, including Medicare, the federal health care program for Americans 65 and older. Some 48 million people are enrolled, and the window to change plans opened earlier than usual this year and closes earlier, too. The new health care law instituted changes for Medicare recipients, and part of that law that would have helped families meet costs for long-term care was scrapped before it ever took effect, which leaves a major gap in coverage. And that's not likely to be the last change. Medicare's on the table as Congress debates deficit reduction. If you receive Medicare, if your family members do so, what's changed for you? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, as Occupy Wall Street protests continue across the U.S., in some places they may have worn out their welcome. But first, NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner joins us, as she often does, here in Studio 3A. Always nice to have you with us.
Always nice to be here.
And news today, in fact, that rates may actually go down for some people.
Indeed. This was trumpeted by federal officials as some good news. Earlier in the year, it looked like the Medicare Part B premium, that's the optional outpatient portion of Medicare, but virtually everybody who has Medicare signs up for it, is going to go up, but only very slightly. It looked like it was going to go up by about $10 a month. It's actually only going to go up by about $3.50 a month. It will be $99.90 next year. Now, for some people, the last 2 years, there has been no Social Security cost of living increase. There is a provision in the law that says in years when there is no cost of living increase that you can't raise Medicare premiums so that people's total Social Security checks don't go down because their Medicare premiums are taken out of their Social Security checks. So there has been no change basically for the last 2 years in Part B premiums. So for those people who've seen no change, they'll have this small $3.50 increase in their premiums. For new people who just got on Medicare and weren't subject to that hold harmless, as it's called, they've been paying $115 a month in their Medicare premiums. Or for people who have who were very high income, so whose Social Security check wouldn't have gone down because of this, they'd also been paying that $115 a month Part B premium. So their premiums will actually go down to $99. You'll see a $15 a month decrease.
And some people might say, wait a minute, we're just talking about a few dollars here, one way or the other. What's the big deal? Well, first, obviously, a lot of senior citizens on fixed incomes, and it is a big deal. And second, we've seen healthcare costs exploding, and this seems to be under control.
That's right. And, you know, back, it was last month when we saw this employer survey that talked about this big spike that a lot of employers saw this year in premiums. And one of the things that the government said in response is, you know, there are indications that the costs seem to be leveling off for next year. We saw that in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Plan, where increases next year are much smaller than they were last year. And again, this is another indication in Medicare where we're seeing smaller than expected increases. So there are some indications that there was some kind of a spike. It may have been from pent-up use during the height of the recession. There were a lot of people who simply did not seek medical care, and so there was some pent-up demand. There also was some thought that it looked like at the beginning of the year we were coming out of the recession, and a lot of insurers increased their premiums and the thought that people... In anticipation of that pent-up demand coming true, and then it didn't because we didn't really move as much out of the recession as we thought. And so, therefore, there's a lot of sort of scaling back. So this is another indication that perhaps the recession is not ending, which is bad news, but that we're also not seeing this huge spike in health insurance premiums.
And next to that long care provision known as the CLASS Act, this was a part of President Obama's health care law that was championed by the late Senator Edward Kennedy. It would have helped older Americans pay for some long-term care needs. Earlier this month, the administration agreed with some of its critics. It's too expensive.
Yeah, it did. And of course, you know, I think the main problem with this law, as it turned out, or was a piece of the law, it was really grafted onto the health care law. Again, as you mentioned, its biggest champion was the late Senator Kennedy. He was not here, obviously, to push it ahead. When it was being put into the health care law, it had an amendment added by Senator Judd Gregg of New Hampshire, who said if the administration could not make it be self-sustaining for 75 years, it could not go into into effect, and that was by some considered, you know, very fiscally responsible, and by others considered a poison pill. And the administration took it and they looked at it and they tried it lots of different ways, but it had to be voluntary, and so it had to pay for itself, and they could not figure out a way to make it really self-sustaining. And, you know, now a lot of the advocates for this who considered it really an extremely important small first step. And remember, this was not just for seniors. This was for everyone. In fact, you had to pay into it for 5 years before it would vest. You had to pay premiums for 5 years before you could get any benefits. Mm-hmm. So, but the idea was that if you were going to be disabled or even temporarily disabled, you would be able to get benefits. It was a small benefit. It was for community living. CLASS, in this case, stood for Community Living Assistance Services and Supports Act. It was just to get non-medical help if you needed someone to come in and help you in the morning, get out of bed, do your cooking, do some light cleaning. It was to really keep people from having to move into an institution, into a nursing home. This was the idea, sort of a first step to help keep people out of the long-term medical system.
Much more expensive.
And so there are a lot of advocates who are extremely upset about the demise of this. The administration has said they do not want it repealed. They would like to continue to work and see if a way can be devised to make it self-sustaining. Republicans largely who oppose it would like to repeal it, and that fight is still going on.
This relates to an article that we saw in the New York Times. Jane Gross, a former New York Times reporter, like many adult children, a primary caregiver for her ailing mother, who's since passed away. She wrote on the New York Times op-ed page that Medicare fails the elderly. It covers many medical procedures that are not useful, she argues, but not the assistance older people actually need. Home aides, help with shopping, bathing, just what you're talking about.
Exactly, and Medicare does not do that. We actually, here at NPR, we did a poll a couple of months ago about baby boomers, preparations for retirement. And, you know, I started doing this beat in 1986, and one of the first stories I did was about long-term care and how ill-prepared people were for long-term care. And this poll showed that very little had changed. The boomers, I think, know a little bit more about long-term care and what Medicare doesn't pay for, largely because, as Jane Gross points out, they are taking care of their elderly parents. But they still don't know who does pay for long-term care. Long-term care insurance is extremely expensive, in many cases difficult to get, and it is still a completely unrecognized something that really does not exist in the system. And you're finding more and more boomers who are now starting to get on Medicare, starting to age, and it's a big hole in the nation's social support system.
We want to hear your questions on what's changed in Medicare, what's changed for you. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. But Julie Rovner, before we get to some calls, I wanted to also ask you, given that gap in coverage, what can you do? This is the open enrollment season. Is there something you could say, well, I'll pay a little extra and get that kind of coverage?
Not really. There are a few, some specialized, you know, in these Medicare Advantage plans, these private Medicare health plans, there are some plans that offer some extra services. There are some plans known as social HMOs that do offer a broader array, including some limited long-term care services. But right now, sort of the default long-term care plan that we have in the U.S. is Medicaid, that's better known as the plan for, you know, for the poor. And indeed, you have to be poor to get Medicaid. And the way most people get Medicaid is they spend down. They go into a nursing home, they spend all of their money. An average nursing home costs now about $80,000 a year. So you go in, you basically spend all the money you have, and then Medicaid takes over and starts spending for you. Right now, Medicaid accounts for about half of the nation's long-term care bill. That was one of the arguments that the advocates for CLASS were making, that, you know, that even though CLASS might be, you know, some expensive, at least it would be taking some of the pressure off of Medicaid, which, again, you were mentioning at the top, the super committee, this deficit reduction panel, is looking at cuts to Medicaid as well as to Medicare. So right now, as I mentioned, Medicaid is sort of the default long-term care plan that the nation has.
We've not seen any details from plans put forward by either Democrats or Republicans on that super committee. They did hold a public hearing yesterday. But nevertheless, people think there's almost no way that there's going to be any plan that does not include some cuts to Medicare and Medicaid.
Absolutely.
And so as people look ahead towards these changes, is there any way to protect yourself against them?
Well, right now, you know, obviously, if you're in your 40s and 50s, there is long-term care insurance. As I mentioned, it can be very expensive. It's complicated. I went one for the long-term care story that I did last month. I actually went and sat in on a long-term care counseling session with a salesperson for long-term care insurance, and even I was a little bit befuddled, and I do this for a living. Other than private long-term care insurance, there isn't really all that much you can do. Right now, I think there really is a need for more social insurance, if you will. And this was a plan that was going, people were going to pay into. It was intended to be self-supporting. So it is really sort of a social need to try and solve this problem. Obviously, people are going to have to pay for it. It's not something, you know, that the government or taxpayers are going to be able to provide free, but certainly people do need to prepare. Right now, an enormous amount, as one can see, all you need to do is talk to friends or neighbors, an enormous amount of long-term care is provided free by family and friends. And that is certainly important. One thing that certainly happens is that there is an increasing source of support for these unpaid caregivers. There are area agencies on aging. There are a lot of local, state and local governments, and also funded by the federal government, places to go and get some help. But it's very difficult to get that all tied together.
And obviously, we're talking about gaps. There are a lot of medical coverage. There is a lot of medical coverage provided by Medicare.
Oh, yes, there is an enormous amount of medical coverage provided by Medicare. But there are, I mean, one of the big problems that's going on right now, there's an increasing move when a senior goes to the hospital, rather than admit them, they sort of partially admit them, they put them under quote-unquote observation. And if you're in the hospital, but in fact, this just happened to my mother. She was under observation, but she was never an inpatient. Now, she was well enough to just go home. But if you're going to go to a nursing home after you've been in the hospital, you have to have been an inpatient for 3 days. Well, if you were only under observation and then you go to a nursing home, you were never an inpatient, and therefore you don't qualify for Medicare's nursing home stay. So this is a big problem for people who are going to a nursing home after, even though they were in the hospital, they were getting treated, they were getting meals, and yet they get to the nursing home and discover, lo and behold, Medicare's not going to cover that nursing home stay because they were never, quote unquote, an inpatient.
Catch 22. We did a story about that last week. Julie Rovner, stay with us. And I promise we will get to your calls. I apologize for that. Julie Rovner, NPR health policy correspondent. More with her in a moment. If you receive Medicare, if your family members do, what has changed and what's coming up in changes? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. The donut hole, parts A, B, C, and D, Medigap, familiar terms to anyone who's navigated the labyrinth of Medicare coverage. There are changes this year, including an earlier open enrollment season. We're talking with NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner about some recent changes and what you might expect going forward. We put a list together of websites that might answer many of your questions about specific situations, including a link to find help in your state. You can find that at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. If you receive Medicare, if you have family members who do, what's changed for you? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. And as promised, let's get to the phones. John is on the line calling from Roanoke in Virginia.
Hello there.
Hi.
I'm sitting outside the Spring Tree Nursing Home, where my wife is been for a few weeks. Medicare is not paying for this portion because she was adjudged not eligible for hospice care yet. She had used some while she was in some rehab. She has a terminal cancer. And one of the big problems is this is very expensive. Not like you would pay in a large city, but it's still $272 a day. And I'm having a great deal of difficulty with some of the banks who have suddenly decided that the power of attorney that we drew up before we retired, they're going to not honor it. They asked me to load this poor woman into medical transport and bring her to the bank. She's on oxygen 24 hours a day.
John, I'm so sorry to hear that, and I'm so sorry for your situation. Julie, is this endemic?
You know, unfortunately, there are a lot of, you know, Medicare covers a lot of things, but, you know, getting qualified for certain things are judgments made by certain, you know, medical professionals, and it goes through the bureaucracy. You know, Medicare does have a hospice benefit, but you have to be adjudged, within terminal within 6 months. And obviously, if your wife hasn't been, then she does not qualify. Or, you know, things can be appealed. And I know people who've gotten caught in all kinds of appeals processes. So it is, I know it is really frustrating. There are certainly there are places that where you can turn to for help. There are things like the Medicare Rights Center and Center for Medicare Advocacy. There are places where when you get an adverse ruling from Medicare, that there are people who can help you.
John, we wish you and your wife the best of luck.
Well, and parting, I caution everybody that's listening to check out their powers of attorney and the rules in their bank. One of the banks says in their brochure they have the right to refuse any and all powers of attorney.
Thanks for the advice, John. Appreciate it.
Surely.
Let's go next to this is Shelley. Shelley with us from Tulsa.
Yes, I kind of have a different take on the whole conversation because I'm 37 years old, but on permanent disability. So therefore, my health coverage is covered through Medicare. And my question is, what exactly is the rationale to the prescription drug coverage gap, or the donut hole, so to speak, and what patients are supposed to do when they hit that early in the year and they're faced with making, you know, tough decisions? Do I buy medication or do I feed my children?
And they're trying to close that donut hole, Julie Rovner, but it remains there.
That's right. Well, of course, the rationale was purely political. It's that they wanted to make this the when they were writing the law back in 2003, they wanted to make it attractive enough that everybody would get something for the premiums, because again, this was going to be a voluntary benefit, so they wanted to get a lot of people to sign up, but they wanted to really cover people who had truly catastrophic drug bills. So what they ended up doing was they front-loaded it, they gave everybody a couple of $1,000 worth of coverage, and then they back-loaded it and gave everybody who had a really huge amount of drug bills coverage, and that left them with this gap in the middle that became known as the donut hole. And indeed, last year's health law is closing that donut hole gradually. So this year, when you hit the donut hole, you get a 50% discount on your brand name drugs, and you get a 14% discount on your generic drugs, which is up from 7%. I guess next year you get 14% up from 7% this year. And slowly it is being closed. But indeed, nobody would have designed, if they'd had enough money, they wouldn't have left that hole there in the first place. So that's why it's there. It wasn't there to do anything logical. It was just there because that's what was left when they were finishing what they wanted, how they wanted to design the benefit.
And Shelley, are your choices literally, do I buy the drugs I need or do I buy food?
Yes, those are my choices. You know, I have congestive heart failure, and Plavix, as anyone that has heart condition knows, is extremely expensive. And if you go off of it, you are at a very high risk of a recurring heart attack. And or do I provide for my children and the needs that they have? So it is a very real, real possibility. And it's a very real difficult situation, and I just don't know where to turn. I mean, do you guys have any, are there any programs out there or suggestions for people that are in my situation?
Although I do, I believe that Plavix is one of the big drugs that's about to go off of patent. You might want to check that,
yes.
So if there's a, when there's a generic, that should help a lot.
Yes.
And certainly I would think that the 50% discount helps. But yeah, I mean, it is certainly a problem. And, we really shouldn't forget there are, several million people on Medicare who are not seniors, who are disabled and by and large getting by on not very much money, and for whom this is, and many of them do have among the most expensive drugs, and it is a real hardship for them.
Shelley, good luck.
Thank you.
There are, as we mentioned, there's Medicare, and there are these Advantage programs. Is that what people are signing up for in this open enrollment period?
You can. That's what the open enrollment period is for, is to sign up and or change your Part D drug program. Part D is a prescription drug program, or join a Medicare Advantage program. That would be either an HMO or a PPO. This would be this is a plan that would take care of all of your health care needs. So if you have a Medigap plan, that would be a supplemental insurance plan that takes care of your deductibles and copayments. You would go see whatever doctor you want. Rather than have that, you would have a plan. You would be in an HMO or a PPO, and you could drop your Medigap. And so during the open enrollment period, you could join or change a Medicare Advantage plan. And they are pretty popular right now. It's almost up to about 1 in 5 Medicare beneficiaries are in one of these Medicare Advantage plans. They're available to almost everybody in the country. There's almost, I believe, I'm not sure there are any counties anymore where there isn't at least one Medicare Advantage plan. Congress is cutting back on the payments. They were being substantially overpaid to the tune of about 14% extra. And this was something the Republicans did back in the drug bill to try and get more people into the plans. They were giving the plans extra money to provide extra benefits so more people would get in. And the Democrats and the health law took back some of that money. But so far, we haven't seen really big cutbacks on benefits or really big hikes in premiums. So people are still sticking with them, and the companies are still offering them, and they're still pretty popular. And this year, for the first time, there is a star system. Medicare has a star system that's rating them for quality, and they're consumer advocates say you want to look for a plan that has either 4 or 5 stars. Now, there's apparently only 9 plans with 5 stars, so you're unlikely to find a 5-star plan in your area unless you live in California. But I guess there's a fair number of 4-star plans. So if you're looking for a plan, to Medicare Advantage plan to join, you might look for one with 4 stars.
And where do you find those ratings?
You find the plan right on Medicare's website. If you go to Medicare.gov, and the drug plans have ratings too, which are largely based on consumer on their consumer service, but also on how well people adhere to their drug regimens. But I think the stars are probably more important when it comes to these Medicare Advantage plans.
May's on the line calling from Santa Rosa, California.
Hi. Am I on?
Yep.
Hi. I want to thank that lady for talking about the importance of supporting your home with various, you know, basic chores and everything. And I'm an example of what she said in the sense that Schwarzenegger made it his top priority to kill the ill, as it were, when he took office and really went after what's called the in-home support program, and I'm on permanent disability. And he essentially bludgeoned the program. It's almost impossible for us to get people in our home now, and the people that we can get in our home now is worse than having nothing. And so, I mean, I see myself going to the doctor much more frequently and just, you know, losing body parts because I don't have this basic health that I used to have, and it's real ugly, and it's a real behind-the-scenes way to kill people, you know, when they're down and out, and so I really appreciate her bringing that point up.
And I just have to say, in fairness, since Governor Brown has been in office, have you seen him move to restore that money?
I don't know. So far, I have not seen that. On the other hand, there were a number of court battles over 8 years with Schwarzenegger continuing to just take strike after strike after strike.
Again, there's a Democrat in office now.
Right, and I guess what I'm trying to say is he doesn't seem to be aware of the fact that there's a problem. It took me 11 months because of my disability, but I wrote a letter to a senator telling her what's going on now because it's a good way to kill, you know, people who are ill, and it's evil, you know. But she's right. You can lower medical bills if people get appropriate care in their home, you know, because the people are not killing themselves and getting injured and operating well past the point that they can actually function. So it's a rather low cost for, you know what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, May.
And the second thing I'd like to say, if I can, is that in terms of prescription and stuff, I pay for all my medicines. And, yeah, it's like food versus medicine because I can't use most prescription drugs from the drug companies. Homeopathics have a miraculous effect on me, but let me tell you, it's really expensive, and mine are prescribed. There's someone who knows what he's doing, but Medicare would never go near any of that stuff. And
Just ask Julie Rovner about that. Alternative therapies like homeopathic drugs, quote unquote drugs, these are not covered by Medicare because they can't find any studies that support their value.
That's right. They need to be approved by the FDA in order to be covered.
And that's not forthcoming.
I don't believe the FDA has approved any homeopathic remedies.
Let's go next to John. John's on the line with us from Sacramento.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I'm a practitioner that makes artificial limbs for the last 20 years, and I've been taking Medicare, Medi-Cal, and VA insurance the whole time. One of the things that I see happening in my industry is that Medicare will challenge about 10 or 20% of the things that we do, and most of these things are pretty minor. And what they'll do is, if they don't think it's necessary to have it, medically necessary to have that anymore, they will drop it, and you can't get reimbursed for that anymore. But a lot of times, I'd say half of the time, they reverse that judgment and they reinstate. And it's just like it seems to me like Medicare is just trying to keep control of the fraud and the check and balance. And so they put things under review, but a lot of times they reverse it and reinstate it when the lobbyist or the industry starts complaining. And it's relatively quick. I've seen things changed in like 1 month after they drop it, or 2 months. It's not really that painful. But, you know, I guess the other thing I want to say, just for all the listeners, I'm sensitive to people's ailments and things like this and money and finances, but people nowadays, with healthcare being a business, people have to be better healthcare consumers and learn about what's available and what's not available and then prepare for that.
John is, of course, right. People should better educate themselves. Nevertheless, there's also, Julie, a fundamental belief that if you're sick and you go to the hospital, if you go to the doctor and there's a government health program to pay for it, it should take care of you.
Yes, there is. And as to the first thing caller was talking about, you know, there is an enormous amount of not just out-and-out fraud, but, you know, what's considered improper payment in Medicare. And people do get frustrated. On the other hand, you know, there are stories every day about fraud. There's an enormous amount of organized crime now. You know, what used to be drug crime is now moving into Medicare crime and Medicaid crime, because that's where the money is. I mean, we spend
the Willie Sutton principle.
Exactly, hundreds of billions of dollars on these programs. So it's a great place for criminals to go. So you can see why the government is forever getting beat up by members of Congress who say you're not doing enough to find the fraud in these programs. So it's a push and pull to give people what they're entitled to, frankly, but not let people take advantage of the programs.
We're talking Medicare with NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Seth. Seth on the line from Salt Lake City.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
I'm actually an insurance agent here. I work with a lot of different plans. And I want to say you've done a very good job. Everything you said is spot on. So you've done your research well. But one of the biggest problems I'm running into as an agent is trying to educate people about not only the different types of plans, but what your options are with long-term care. They always say, well, my kids will take care of me, or, well, my parents never had to go to a facility. And it seems to be because heart attacks and cancers and things like that that kind of killed you quickly are going away and they're treated. A lot of people don't realize how prevalent long-term care is nowadays. And I was wondering if you knew anything the government was doing as far as what they're expecting for long-term care, or just how you've talked to people about it and how to handle it, whether it's, quite frankly, coming down to, do you want to pay $100 a month for a policy so that a nurse can clean up after you, or do you have some family members that can? So I was wondering if you'd found out anything about long-term care information, or just how to talk to people about it so that we can get more people educated and help them become better health insurance consumers like the other guy was mentioning.
Mm-hmm. Julie?
Well, just, you know, in talking to people just from the poll that we did, and I went out, the poll was not random, obviously, but in the story that I did, I went and talked to some of the people randomly about why they thought, you know, what they did. People, I certainly know from long experience, A, people don't like to think about the possibility that they might need long-term care, which I'm sure you must know as an agent. You know, you never want to think about something bad that's going to happen. And you're absolutely right. They think, well, I hope my kids will take care of me, or, you know, I hope that I'll die fast, or, you know, I hope I won't need that. And you run into people who say, I'd rather kill myself than go into a nursing home. You really do hear that. But, you know, I've got the statistics in front of me. There are 10 million people who currently need long-term care. By 2020, it's going to be 15 million. And by 2050, it's going to be 26 million. There are a lot of baby boomers. We don't have as many kids. And the kids that we do have tend to live far away. It is clearly a huge problem that is, you know, facing us square in the face. And there's not a lot of baby boomers who are doing a lot about it. I think you're absolutely right.
Have you heard anything about what they're planning to do? Because I know there's indemnity plans for short-term care. There's long-term
I don't know about you, Seth, but I'm planning to live forever.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And you're a baby boomer, are you not, Neil?
I am.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's the solution. I think that we figured it out.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. Julie Rovner reports on solutions other than living forever as NPR's health policy correspondent. She was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A to talk about Medicare. Thanks very much, as always, Julie.
You're welcome.
Up next, Occupy Wall Street protests spread and, in some places, wear out their welcome. We'll talk with NPR's Margot Adler about support and resistance for the movement. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.